quickly do the effects of marijuana wear off, and when is it safe to drive? Ohio lawmakers are looking at increasing the THC limit for driving, but is there an effective marijuana breathalyzer? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to examine the science behind cannabis and driving and whether a new generation of THC breathalyzers could be on the horizon are University of Colorado Boulder Associate Professor in the Department of Psychology and Neuroscience, Cinnamon Bidwell. Thanks for being here, Professor Bidwell.
Thanks for having me.
And Ohio Public Media State House News Bureau correspondent Sarah Donaldson. Welcome back, Sarah.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Great to have you. Sarah, Ohio voters approved a ballot measure in 2023 to legalize adult use cannabis. We've talked to you about that many times on the program. Lawmakers have been talking about making changes to the law. Voters approved almost ever since. Where do those efforts stand now?
Yeah, so it's a lot of the same that we've talked about over these last year and a half, Lucy. So the Senate has again passed a slew of changes to the voter-approved statute, Issue 2. A lot of those changes deal with the consumer aspects of marijuana, home grow aspects. So, for example, under this bill, home grow goes from 12 plants or less in an adult household to 6 plants or less in an adult household. This bill puts caps on THC limits in both plant products and extracts. It puts a ceiling on how many dispensaries could actually exist in the state of Ohio. It gets rid of what's called the Social Equity Program, which is a program that lawmakers have talked about repealing that hasn't really gotten off its feet yet. Its intent is to, you know, get folks into the industry who have been impacted by prior marijuana convictions. So there's a lot in that bill, and I don't want to go too far into the weeds, no pun intended. It passed the Ohio Senate, but of course, the Republican-led Ohio House, and of course, Republicans lead the Senate as well, they are taking a different approach again. There are some Republicans in, you know, pretty pro-marijuana districts that I think are hard-pressed to vote against some of these changes that the Senate passed. So it sounds like the House is going to be introducing its own bill again. So whether any of these changes ever make it to the governor, still kind of a question.
Yeah. And you mentioned reducing THC levels. Those were pretty high, again, no pun intended, in the original legislation, right? I mean, isn't that something that's been kind of a debate? How high are they and what would this bill do?
Yes, the wording is a little tough to parse through, but under issue 2, I believe for concentrates and for extracts, it was like a 90% benchmark, but it wasn't necessarily a ceiling that you couldn't go any higher than 90%. Under this bill that the Senate passed, that lowers it to 70%. That is a compromise that came out in 2023 because initially lawmakers were looking at making it a lot lower and they settled on the 70% number, but the bill in the Senate that passed also leaves final discretion with the Ohio Department of Commerce. So the Department of Commerce could either lower or raise that THC limit on concentrates and extracts if they so chose to.
Professor Bidwell, what do you think about those levels of THC? Is it, what about 90 and 70? How do those compare to what you all have in Colorado and what you've seen in your research?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question. And with legalization and, you know, Colorado kind of starting the wave here, we have these products that have THC potencies that are so much higher and products that have THC levels that have really never been tested in laboratory settings. So these state market products, there's just so many legal hurdles to even bring them into the laboratory to test for. You know, is the potency even accurate? Do they have contaminants? Much less do administration studies to really understand the risks of these products, whether or not, you know, 70 versus 90% is a meaningful kind of, you know, difference, right? So it's really hard to make policy that's based on science because the research has been really sorely limited in terms of how we can investigate these studies.
Sarah, another concern here in Ohio has been defining what it means to be driving under the influence of cannabis. How does Ohio law currently define a cannabis-related OVI?
So there are a couple of ways that Ohio law defines it, and some of it lawmakers, including Senator Nathan Manning, say is outdated because Ohio has per se charges, which is that's when you're pulled over by a police officer and you do some sort of a field sobriety test. If we're talking about alcohol and you fail that field sobriety test, that's determined that you're charged with an OVI right there. There's kind of a similar process for marijuana, but the challenge, of course, is when you're relying on something like a urine test, there's not a breathalyzer for marijuana. There's not a breathalyzer equivalent for marijuana. So often, if they are testing for drugs, they're doing maybe a urine test or a whole blood test. And urine tests, especially, to my understanding, don't provide a great picture if someone has recently smoked marijuana, like in the last couple of hours. Just, marijuana could stay in urine or in the bloodstream for days to weeks, depending on how regularly someone is consuming.
Professor Bidwell, how difficult is it to determine whether someone is too impaired by marijuana to drive?
Yeah, marijuana just it's so much more complicated. We have this model coming from alcohol, as she was just saying, that we have this really standard expectation. People believe that a breath alcohol test is really reliable. There's a really good correlation there between how much alcohol is in your breath versus how much is in your blood, which directly links with how impaired you are as a driver. And so there's this, body of literature to support that, and the way that alcohol is metabolized in the body just makes it a lot easier to investigate it and measure it that way. When it comes to cannabis, we're talking about just a wholly different process. So first, there's just tiny, tiny amounts of THC that get stored in biological systems like breath or tissue or blood. So just in terms of quantity, we're talking about much smaller amounts. And so, with that, if there's a tiny bit of air with a tiny amount, it just makes it so much harder to measure. The other piece is that cannabis gets stored in the body. So as you were saying, somebody who's using, fairly often can have quite a bit of cannabis just circulating in their blood, in their breath, that may not indicate recent use.
We're talking about the science behind cannabis and driving and how law enforcement officials test for intoxication. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Professor Bidwell, can you talk a little bit more about why it's more difficult to determine when someone has consumed too much marijuana versus too much, whether they're impaired by cannabis? Because I'm sorry, I probably said that all wrong. Why is it more difficult to test for cannabis impairment than alcohol impairment? I mean, there's a lot of kind of science that's caught up in that, isn't there?
For sure, for sure. And when we're thinking about road safety, we're thinking about is someone actually impaired behind the wheel, right? Is there behavior or intoxication level, is it impacting their own safety or the safety of others on the road? And with, the story of alcohol, as I was alluding to earlier, we have really strong, confident science to suggest that a biomarker, a breath level of alcohol, is strongly linked with the amount of alcohol that's influencing someone's brain and the amount of impairment that they may be experiencing. With cannabis, unfortunately, it's just a messier story. So people can have high levels of tolerance to cannabis, and so different levels of exposure mean different things with different people. Some people exhibit a lot of impairment with very low levels. Some people experience lower levels of impairment. And so it's because of these individual differences, and then also the way that cannabis is metabolized and stored in the body, being, sticking around much longer and things like that, it's just not as easy.
Sure. Sarah, you started to get into this, but an Ohio lawmaker has proposed changing the THC limits permitted to drive. Explain what he wants to do.
Yeah, so Senator Nathan Manning, he's a Republican. He has introduced this bill before, but he says, this time around it's even more pertinent because in past sessions, of course, medical marijuana was legal, so this could have affected medical marijuana patients, but now it's expanding to all Ohio adult use consumers. So it makes a couple of changes. We were both, myself and Professor Bildwell, were talking about, some of the challenges in the different tests that are used on alcohol, but this bill eliminates a per se charge for if someone is being tested, if their urine is being tested, their blood serum is being tested, or their plasma is being tested. And like I said, that per se charge is that kind of automatic charge. It adds an evidentiary standard again. So an officer would have to point to evidence of impairment going just beyond that urine or blood serum or plasma test. Manning tells me that the bill is, it's early in consideration. We're early in the legislative process here, but he tells me there's likely going to be an amendment to add oral fluid tests because Ohio lawmakers recently passed a bill that was signed by Governor Mike DeWine that legalized oral fluid tests. So officers can now swab for oral fluids when they're trying to determine someone's impairment. Manning says that there's some research to suggest that oral fluid might be a little more accurate in determining like current marijuana impairment. So they may be adding oral fluids to that bill, but for all of those tests that I just mentioned, urine, blood serum, or plasma, they're not allowed to determine a per se charge anymore. But those, the level of THC in someone's, that's showing up in someone's test would also be raised to kind of accept the fact that, prior to medical marijuana being legalized in Ohio, and then prior to recreational marijuana being legalized in Ohio, law enforcement officers just looked at it as, well, this is an illegal substance, so there shouldn't be any content in your bloodstream or in your urine stream or anything like that. But of course, Senator Manning tells me, whether you like it or not, marijuana is legal, and we don't want to punish people for doing something that's legal.
Professor Bidwell, let's talk a little bit about those tests, urine tests, blood tests, oral fluids test. How difficult is it to do all that in a field test, a field sobriety testing situation?
Yeah, I think the spirit behind it is really valid. Unfortunately, the science is really just not there. It sounds like the spirit behind some of the changes that your state is considering are really based on this idea that someone should show evidence of impairment first. We can't just base it on having some quantity of THC in their system as automatically triggering some kind of charge. So, the spirit of that makes a lot of sense to me, that we want to sort of focus on impairment here and risk for personal and other safety. So that makes a lot of sense. But in terms of kind of trying to back it up with a biomarker, I will say that the science is working hard to answer those questions, but we're not quite there yet, right? So even with an oral fluid test, there's going to be a lot of individual differences. In terms of the precise timing, it's not nailed down in terms of how long or what a threshold is to say, hey, someone recently used cannabis and therefore they're impaired behind the wheel. And again, just linking back to this idea that there's very, very small quantities of THC, the psychoactive drug in cannabis that's being stored in the body or even being measured in these tests, these huge individual differences. And then the other piece is this wide range of types of ways, sorry, that was a this wide range of products that people can consume, right? So you have edibles, you have concentrates, you have flower, and you have all these different forms of cannabis that can be consumed and get stored in the body in different ways and at different levels. And so we are not at the point where we have one standard test or one standard number that can suggest somebody used cannabis over a specific period of time.
We'll continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we ask whether medical cannabis for children under 18 is a good idea. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the science behind cannabis and driving and how police can test for intoxication. My guests are University of Colorado Boulder Associate Professor in the Department of Psychology and Neuroscience, Cinnamon Bidwell, and Ohio Public Media Statehouse News Bureau Correspondent, Sarah Donaldson. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Professor Bidwell, talk about the work your lab is doing to try to develop a standard that could be used in a breathalyzer or a similar device when it comes to cannabis intoxication.
Yeah, we're really enthusiastic about trying to support the science behind these kinds of policy decisions. And so the research behind a THC breathalyzer, a cannabis breathalyzer, is still really, really new. And so as an academic researcher, we've partnered with the National Institute on Standards and Technology. So those folks, they're experts on chemical engineering and just the chemical breath vapors that are exuded when somebody has consumed a drug or have been exposed to toxins. And when it comes to THC, like I said, these are tiny, tiny amounts of THC coming out in these tiny breath vapors. And so we really need experts, chemical engineering experts, chemical breath experts to really extract and see and determine how accurately we can measure these components of cannabis, different forms of cannabis, in breath. And so we're working with them to just try to establish the science. Is there a reliable, way to measure this? And how does it change over time? So in our lab, we are able to work with state market products in Colorado. And so we can examine the levels of THC in breath across a wide variety of potencies, flower concentrates, the different types of cannabis that people actually use. And so we're trying to move the science forward by really, establishing those timelines and those measurement standards.
And Professor Bidwell, what can you tell us about what your research has found so far?
Yeah, so we're in preliminary, full-on data collection mode. Our current study is really trying to move beyond this idea, okay, so we can measure THC in breath, but really trying to move it to the phase of how do we get it to a place where it's actually meaningful. So when we have people who we know have recently used cannabis of a certain potency, what do their breath levels look like? How does it change over time? Examining both before and after use. And so this is, a really brand new study. And we're ongoing in terms of our research and data collection.
And with the study's approach, are you also trying to gauge how those people under different levels of, inebriation, I guess, are behaving behind the wheel? I mean, do you have a way of testing that?
Yeah, so that is a great question. And science moves slowly. So we are focused in this study specifically on collecting really reliable multiple measures of breath over a couple-hour period. So, for example, someone recently used cannabis of different potencies, and then we're getting lots of breath collections over 2-hour periods. So, seeing how does that change? What are the peaks? What happens after a couple hours? Are there still levels, or is there a point in time in which we can say, oh, okay, hey, this is where breath collection sort of shifts or in some kind of meaningful way? We are collecting data on how subjectively impaired they feel, would they feel comfortable driving, but we're not yet at the point where we're putting them in, a driving simulator or doing sort of more formal driving safety measurements. It's a great question.
Okay. Sarah, you were talking about, we've talked about some of the legislation that you've been following at the Ohio State House. You mentioned that the bill that would change the initiated statute that voters approved in 2023, that's been passed by the Senate. It's going before the House. You're expecting some changes there. What about this bill that would change how THC is measured for driving impairment? Where is that, and are you expecting that to advance?
Yeah, so this bill is in the really early stages, like I said, and I talked to Senator Manning, and he said the reason that it wasn't included in the bigger overhaul bill was because it is still in those early stages, and they're still trying to parse through some of the science that Professor Bidwell says is just not fully there yet. And some of the holdup is that addition of the oral fluids per se levels. So I think that this bill, it's been introduced before and it hasn't moved out of committee, but I think that it's early enough in the legislative session that this is absolutely something that could make it to the finish line. We've got until the end of next year that they could work on this bill. And I think that there is an appetite, from lawmakers who are both supportive of marijuana and legal marijuana, and lawmakers who opposed Issue 2's passage. I think that there seems to be agreement, at least on the committee that this bill is being heard, that, something needs to be done to ensure that folks are not, getting in trouble for something that is legal.
Sarah, can you talk a little bit more about who is supporting this legislation and why, and who's opposing it and why?
Yeah, so we don't have a great picture yet just because the bill was introduced pretty recently, and I don't believe it's yet been scheduled for proponent-opponent testimony, but going off of its hearings in the last legislative session, the Ohio State Bar Association and the Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers were both proponents of the bill. And there was an OVI victims advocacy organization that was a proponent and then switched to being an opponent. That was the last time around. So we'll see, because, the bill, of course, sometimes there are amendments made that cause people to change why they support or don't support a bill. So there could be proponents or opponents who change their stance based on this bill, which sounds like it's still primed to get changes.
Professor Bidwell, what do we know? I know your research in terms of levels is still in the early stages, but what do we know about the risks or safety when it comes to driving after or even while consuming cannabis?
Yeah, for sure. So, again, to just use alcohol as the model, alcohol is a pretty rapid and pervasive central nervous system depressant. So it's affecting a lot of different systems very, very quickly, motor timing, balance, things like that, that, very directly impact driving. Cannabis, this is the story, is just much more complicated. So the receptors that interact with THC are not pervasive over the central nervous system. They're in selective areas. So we get things like executive function, some motor timing changes, some balance impact, but it's not quite as dramatic or quite as pervasive as we would see under the influence of alcohol. So selective impairments that are in some cases tougher to detect, and that in some cases, different levels of consumption may impact different people in different ways. So for some folks, it could be very, very severe and high levels of impairment, especially folks who are newer or occasional users, And so it just, again, it's just this huge range in terms of individual effects and individual differences. So it's a tricky story.
Yeah. Sarah, what can you tell us about the circumstances under which law enforcement can pull someone over for suspected impaired driving, especially when it comes to cannabis? I mean, you can kind of smell it coming out of cars sometimes, and I don't know if that's because somebody just has it on their clothes or they're consuming it in their cars, or what are the reasons law enforcement can pull somebody over these days?
Well, and you bring up a good point that law enforcement, they have to walk a finer line than they used to, especially when it comes to the smell of marijuana. Of course, there was a whole conversation when recreational marijuana was legalized, and I think it was happening when medical marijuana was legalized as well, that there are canine units, canine dogs who were trained to sniff out marijuana, and they've had to retire because that's not a drug that is illegal in Ohio anymore. So, my conversations with folks in law enforcement have been, they're trained to recognize impairment no matter what that impairment is, whether it may be that someone's just falling asleep behind the wheel, swerving, the same sort of stuff you see when someone's texting and driving, swerving in and out of lanes, not following the rules of the road. Law enforcement officers are definitely looking for that. I think where it gets trickier is the conversation that we're talking about when someone's pulled over and they're going through the course of action that they need to go through to determine whether to charge someone with an OVI. I think that's where it gets a little trickier.
And Professor Bidwell, when do you hope to have more concrete information about how to measure cannabis intoxication accurately?
Yeah, so our study, we have about another year of data collection. And so we're always doing preliminary analysis and starting to get the word out as quickly as possible. We also have studies where we're measuring THC in blood and other biomarkers. And so the idea would be for these different approaches and different methods to converge and share this information with policymakers and law enforcement as soon as possible.
Okay. Well, I have been talking with University of Colorado Boulder Associate Professor in the Department of Psychology and Neuroscience, Cinnamon Bidwell, and Ohio Public Media State House News Bureau correspondent, Sarah Donaldson. Thank you both so much for your time today and for this fascinating conversation.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Up next, we ask whether medical cannabis for children under 18 is a good idea. This is Cincinnati Edition.